Okay, thank you. Good afternoon. The first question that I'm going to respond to was around providing a summary of trends before 2000 approximately. So in response to this question, I'm going to refer to three pieces of information. One, a state of environment report published by what was at the time the Southland Regional Council, now Environment Southland, called the State of Environment, October 2000. I have three hard copies here, and it's available online electronically. Also, a publication in the New Zealand Journal of Marine Freshwater Research by Hamill and McBride, published 2003, looking at river water quality trends and increased dairying in Southland. And finally, a publication which is in press. The authors this morning have agreed to release a memo which accompanies this as a written response. So that document is published by Robertson, Stevens and Dudley, entitled New River Estuary, a review of water quality data in relation to eutrophication 1991 to 2015, prepared by NIWA and Regal Coastal Management. So in Southland State of Environment Report for Water, October 2000, water quality state and trends were assessed using data available from as early as the 1970s. The authors do not state the specific site and parameter time periods included. However, do refer to trends or changes having occurred since the 1970s for a couple of locations and trends continuing since 1989, coincidental to the NIWA operated sites in Southland being initiated, as well as to 5 and 10 year periods within that analysis. So the key findings are summarised and quoted, and I'll read those quotes directly. So with respect to faecal bacteria, on page 31, quote, faecal contamination has worsened in the Matara at Otamita since 1975, and sampling near Gore since 94 has confirmed this deterioration. The headwaters of the Ōreti and Aparima rivers have excellent water quality, but faecal contamination causes a health risk to bathing in the lower reaches. Faecal contamination has not changed in either river since 1994, but there has been improvement in the Ōreti since 1977, and records suggest a deterioration in the Aparima. The Fiordland Lakes and most of the Waiau River have an excellent water quality. At Tuatapere, faecal contamination has increased since 1979, and the health risk is now borderline. No change has occurred since 1994. And there are some figures, notably figure 19 on page 32, which illustrates 2 of 12 sites with deteriorating levels of faecal bacteria. So the authors considered harmful substances as well on page 32, and I quote, records from the last 10 years show a continued trend of lower biological oxygen demand in the major catchments we've monitored, and there's a figure that illustrates that. Ammonia levels have decreased over the last 20 years in the Matara, Ōreti and Waiau. This improving trend has continued since 1989 in the Ōreti and Waiau rivers, illustrated in figure 21. However, a deterioration has occurred in the Waituna Creek, and there has been no recent 5-year improvement in the Makariwa River at Taramoa, which still rates poorly. So figure 20 on page 33 illustrates 7 of 10 sites having an improvement in levels of biological oxygen demand, and figure 21 on page 33 illustrates 4 of 17 to have improved levels of ammonia in one site deterioration. So in addition, they considered nutrients, and from page 34 Nitrogen concentrations have increased in all of the major catchments in the last two decades, with degradation being particularly rapid in the last decade. Only the Otautau stream, a tributary of the Aparima, has shown an improvement in nitrogen levels. Increasing phosphorus concentrations have been recorded in all the major catchments. No sites are showing improvement. And figure 22 on page 35 illustrates 7 of 16 sites with a deterioration in nitrogen and 1 with an improving level. Figure 23 on page 35 illustrates 8 of 16 sites with a deterioration in phosphorus level. So, secondly, Hamill and McBride published 2003 in the New Zealand Journal of Freshwater Marine Science Research, and had analysed 6 water quality variables from 29 sites in the Southland for July 1995 to 2001. And I quote from the abstract of that paper, results indicate that increased dairy farming has been associated with increased concentrations of dissolved reactive phosphorus. There has been a worsening in other water quality variables, oxidised nitrogen, dissolved oxygen, but these are also occurring in non-dairying catchments. An improvement in observed water quality was not or disappeared after flow adjustment. And then the final document in press that I refer to, Robertson et al. In press, assessed water quality data collected by the Invercargill City Council between 1991 and 2015 from 8 shallow sites within New River Estuary and 1 site on Ōreti Beach. The relevant sections of this report are provided in a memo that's attached. It includes a map showing the location of the sites and then some tables showing the results of trend analysis for each of those locations. But to summarise, with the exception of the site named the Tip Outlet, that's a site located in the boardwalk area, the outlet from Daffodil Bay, all sites revealed a deterioration in nitrate, dissolved inorganic nitrogen and total phosphorus. The Tip Outlet site illustrated a deterioration in total phosphorus but an improvement in dissolved inorganic nitrogen and ammonia. There is evidence that the nitrogen load leaching from the tip may be decreasing while nutrient concentrations in other parts of the estuary continue to increase. Okay, the next question that I'm going to address is regarding microbial contamination of boars. And I have a question here. Can you indicate the proportion of wells impacted by direct contamination from poor wellhead protection versus aquifer contamination? And in response, in the time available, we're unable to assess individual boars' likely mechanism of contamination as being from poor wellhead versus aquifer contamination. However, in the validation of the physiographics work, Dr. Tom Snelder identified that the Central Plains physiographic zone had the highest incidence of groundwater E. coli contamination. We think this reflects the role of bypass flow through the soil zone and or down the annulus of the well. As you might expect, desiccation and cracking or shrinking of the soil adjacent to a wellhead could promote bypass flow. And that's the end of my questions.
Let's check if the panel members have any follow-up questions.
Just one. The data you suggested to us yesterday had a lot of traffic light recording. Some of the red was actually quite intrusive over the Southland map that you showed, and I was wondering how close or far away it was from the indicator lines. In other words, we expected to see a cumulative effect down the region, but the red dots seemed to go well up into your graph, and I wasn't sure whether they had missed by a little bit or whether they had missed by a large amount. So it was just to give some context to how you on the standards that you had, how they actually played out in real life.
Sure. If I understand what you're asking about the magnitude of the observed state in context to the standards they're compared to. The figures I presented yesterday didn't make that comparison. They were a sort of a binary test, a pass or fail. It would be possible to assess that. I'd need some further time to do that.
Yes. Just a little bit of detail, when you gave us some figures on fecal contamination, do we have any refinement on that broad term, given can we identify source, human, animal, bird, rookery, and if animal, which particular contributor that might be, and any variations between sites on the same rivers?
Yes. So I'm going to answer the question in two parts. The first part around fecal contamination, I think you may be picking up on the terminology I've used, and that reflects the use historically of fecal bacteria as an indicator, and more recently, yesterday, I was using E. coli as a specific fecal indicator bacteria, and that reflects a change in the monitoring programs from the early 90s. So in response to the second part of your question around sources of contamination, yes, there are methods available to determine the sources of contamination, and they are able to discriminate sources between broad sort of species groups, avian, ovine, ruminant, human, and within the ruminant group they're able to discriminate between cows and sheep using a bovine and ovine indicator. Similarly within the avian groups they're able to discriminate between ducks and gulls. And there are ongoing developments within that area of microbiology that are increasing the resolution of species identification. In Southland, we have carried out a number of investigations, and the results of some of those, namely the Otapuni stream fecal source investigation, are available on Environment Southland's website. There's another publication available on Environment Southland's website currently that looks at the role of sheep as a potential contributor to E. coli. Of those two reports, both were successful in identifying sources of contamination. In the Otapuni, a longitudinal study was carried out that identified a background ruminant contamination, which was often had a component of ovine contamination within it, and then a human source within the city as the samples moved towards or within the city boundary. Yep. So increasingly dominated by that human source. That other study that I referred to, the investigation of sheep as a potential source of microbial contamination in Southland, was not an extensive survey of the region. It was a pilot study with ESR to look at to get a better understanding of the ability to use those indicators and to detect sheep source microbial contamination in waterways, and again it was successful. Sheep source contamination was positively identified in a number of the waterways that were tested, and some of them also had a cow signature, a bovine signature present. So beyond that, we have an ongoing work program under the Human Health Work Program that has been collecting samples for source discrimination from a number of sites across the region, and several of those including sites that have identified high levels of microbial contamination. That work is, the field work is just coming to completion, and there hasn't been any formal reporting on that at this stage. So what I can tell you is that it has identified mixed sources to be present in many locations, and that those are often made up of a combination of sheep and cows. Sometimes there is a ruminant source which is not attributed to sheep and cows. It is often indicated the presence of contamination from wildfowl, namely ducks, and intermittently, and very intermittently, the presence of human-sourced fecal contamination from those water bodies.
Well, supplementary, if I may. So how does this play out in practice? When you get a high microbial reading, you then do some refinement to try and identify source, or how does this work in the field?
In practice, this works because we collect additional sample volume at the time of collecting a routine sample for a predefined set of sites and criteria. For some locations, that was samples under after rainfall, and samples that were at sort of base flow. So in order to develop that sampling that sampling regime, we had identified whether sites appeared to have a persistent issue with microbial contamination, that is, high levels of contamination that often occurred irrespective of rainfall prior to the sample, versus sites that had a very strong link to rainfall, that were relatively low until after it rained and then were high. So from that, we had identified sites that were of interest and sought about collecting samples. The analysis is quite expensive and very specialised, so we're not able to do this routinely for every single sample, and obviously it represents a snapshot in time. It's not it's not a continual picture of the sources, but more an indication of whether what you understand about a catchment from a desktop study or understanding of land use and land management within the catchment is consistent with the signal that's being detected in water. So from that, we're able to indicate whether a sample was positive or negative for a particular species indicator. And as I mentioned, these methods are developing quite rapidly. Very recently, the organisation ESR, who do the majority of this work, have been developing a quantitative method, rather in addition to the presence-absence methods, so that you may be able to, in the future, compare the relative amount of, for argument's sake, ovine or sheep source contamination at one location to the relative amount of ovine contamination at other locations. What it can't do is make comparisons between species at the same location. So we're not able to say that a certain percentage of the contamination at this site comes from this source. We can say these sources are present, and we can say at this location this source is relatively high or relatively low.
Thank you. Okay, no, thank you very much for that. In terms of this issue of fecal bacteria, I note that you prepared a memorandum, which is attachment 5 to the section 32 report. which I think summarises a lot of the information you've just provided to us.
Yep.
Okay.
Thank you. Thank you. Just take one.